It's about time an unbiased voice cut through all the hype that surrounds our social, economic, and political issues. We need to engage in discussions using straightforward, simple, and clear language. That's what Real Issues No BS does. No spin, no marketing, just honest discourse so that real communication, disagreement, and solutions can occur. Host Gary Kaskowitz, author of Brand It Like Barack, How Barack Obama Sold Himself to America, and What You Can Learn From This, helps you see through the BS and throw away the packaging, not the contents. Now, here's Gary.
Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Real Issues, No BS on WebTalkRadio.net. I'm your host, Gary Kaskowitz, author of Brand It Like Barack, How Barack Obama Sold Himself to America, and What You Can Learn From This. I've also been a researcher, teacher, and marketing consultant having to do with all aspects of marketing with an emphasis on branding and emotional marketing. On today's episode, we're going to actually talk about something which I find very intriguing, and I believe you will as well. It's the notion of what makes for a magnetic leader and how you can become one in your own life. We have a special guest that will talk about magnetic leadership in a moment, but before we introduce her, I just wanted to take a moment and say this is a topic I think everyone will really benefit from listening to, in that we all are leaders in our own lives. We have to maintain our own lives, and we have to be leaders, whether we run an organization of a million people, or a country of a couple hundred million people, or whether we are just, you know, an employee in somebody else's organization, or looking to lead our own lives and whatever we do with our families and such not. Magnetic leadership is something which I think is a crucial topic, because it all has to come back to branding. And so, without further ado, let's go on to today's guest. Today we are very fortunate to be joined by a very special guest, Diane Durkin. Diane is the president and founder of Loyalty Factor, a consulting and training company that has worked with many, many of the nation's most prominent corporations. She is also a successful author. She has authored two books, the first being The Loyalty Factor, Building Employee, Customer, and Brand Loyalty, and her new book, and I'm not sure if it's been released yet, I'll ask her in a moment, but it's a great, sounds like a great one, The Power of Magnetic Leadership, It's Time to Get Real. Diane has been a guest on many different shows, including ABC, and been interviewed by the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal, among others. So we are very fortunate to have her as our guest today, and I am so looking forward to talking to you. Welcome, Diane.
Welcome, and thank you.
So, Diane, first of all, let me ask the first question. The Magnetic Leadership book, is that available yet?
It's not. It'll be the end of April, the 1st of May at the absolute latest.
Okay, great. Well, I look forward to that one. But I do want to talk about some of the topics that I think you probably will be discussing in that book with you today, because today what we're talking about, again, is the notion of leadership and how leadership, especially magnetic leadership, can really influence the success of a business. And I know you've done a lot of work with this, Diane, in terms of studying some of the, what we could consider some of the great leaders of business, including like Steve Jobs.
Exactly. And, you know, it's the magnetic leadership is really all about how you are as a leader and then how you engage other people in the possibilities. And then the charisma that you have to really bring in people and get them all excited about your vision, your purpose, your values, and those kinds of things. And that's really the number one thing that magnetic leaders need to do. And I think Steve has really done a great job in that arena.
That is so interesting. If you could elaborate for a few minutes on what you mean with that, because it sounds as if the notion of magnetic leadership, and I don't want people to be, you know, under the false impression that it's only for visionaries, if you will, because I think it's so much more than that. I'm sure that your work entails how we can all do this in our lives. You don't have to be that visionary per se, but you how to share your vision, which is kind of, we all have visions. We don't have to, you know, have that Steve Jobs type of, I'm going to create the new Macintosh out of thin air, but we all have vision. We all have things we want to do. And can we translate that to our lives, everyday lives?
Absolutely. I mean, we all have visions of where we want to go, and sometimes we've got the capability to get us there, and other times we don't. And what you have to do is surround yourself with people that you know can help get you there. And that's really, you know, in many cases what Steve has done here. But he's also had his own vision, obviously. You know, when I was looking at him, I always talk about vision, purpose, and values as being the number one thing that a magnetic leader has got to do. And as I was analyzing it, one of the first things that Apple had done is they took computer out of the name. And they did that back in 2007. And why did they do that? Well, it was because they clearly understood the expansion into the consumer electronic marketplace. And by taking computer out of the name, he had this vision for the future. He and his team had this vision for the future.
So even
the thing is that magnetic leaders have to have is a passion. And this is where you take it down to us individually. We may have a vision, and we also have this passion that goes along with it. And his passion was to be extremely creative and innovative. Beyond making money, I mean, if you look at the purpose statement of Apple, it's to make a contribution to the world by making tools for the mind that advances humankind. Now, that in itself attracts the young people, which is where he got his initial market share. You know, people just flocked to that creative, that innovative, that vision. And then on top of that, the value system that he and the company have portrayed, number one, they said, it's we're going to honor and respect innovation. And number two, we're going to manage our people really well. And number three, we're going to develop the best quality product we can ever have, and we're really going to make sure our customer service is number one. And that creates a culture that really helps people to feel good about what they're doing.
I'm sorry to interrupt, Diane, but I mean, I find so many different things here that I find fascinating. I really want to explore a couple of them in more detail, because a lot of what you're saying actually reminds me of some of the work I've done in terms of researching. I've researched Barack Obama and how he was able to use the same notion of vision and leadership in order to come from an unknown to win the election, the presidential election. And I see a lot of parallels with what you're describing with Steve Jobs and probably many other people that we could all learn from, the notion, this notion of vision and passion, to really get people to buy into what it is that you envision for your world, and people really having that passion that you have yourself as the leader, but people also sharing that passion by being associated with you, if you will. And you mentioned three things, vision, purpose, and values. I was wondering if you could just elaborate for a minute on what the distinction is between something like vision versus purpose. Is there a difference there in your mind, or is it kind of similar?
No, they're similar, but there is a difference. The purpose is going beyond the money. What are you here to achieve in this world? What do you, as a result of your product, why is the world a better place?
Okay.
The vision is, where do we want to be in the future? How do we want to change that world? What is it that we're going to do to change it? And there's definitely a distinction there. And then the values are, what are the core by which we're going to live by, and nothing is going to come in the way of that? You know, whether it be good customer service or product quality or innovation and creativity, what are those core values that everything is going to revolve around?
Okay. So almost like the purpose, would many people might think of that as a almost like the mission statement. Here's who we are and why we exist, but the vision is how I get this to the world, and the values are, these are, I'm not going to deviate from these. I'm going to get it across this way.
Exactly.
Excellent. And you had mentioned before that there were many different steps, and I think Steve Jobs is an example of an incredibly magnetic and visionary leader, as are many others. And I was wondering if you could just, maybe show us either one of two things. Actually, we'll probably got to talk about both, but the notion of how Steve Jobs himself was able to incorporate this, because I know you talk a lot about, you know, the eight points of success, if you will, for Jobs and Apple. And I also know that you probably have looked at other magnetic leaders and how we can all become our own magnetic leader, if you will. So which way would you like to start?
Well, why don't I start with, you know, in my book, I said it's time to get real. And that R-E-A-L stands for, R is recruit the right people in the right place at the right time and retain them. Okay? And I think he's done a great job with that. I mean, he's almost created this cult-like belief.
Right.
Products as well as, and it requires, the people that work there, it requires that they have to love the Mac.
Right.
I mean, they have to be totally committed to this Mac. And it's that passion, and it's that hiring those types of people. And then he's done a great job of retaining them. And the way he's retained them is people want to feel like they bring their brains to work and their brains are valued.
Mm.
And I think that's what he has done. He's valued that creative innovation mm-hmm. that people have brought. I mean, no idea is left unturned. And no idea is ridiculous. And that type of culture, you know, withstands any long hours that people have to work or any criticism that they may get, you know, whether it be from Jobs himself, because, you know, he's been known to be unrelenting. He's a perfectionist.
I've heard that about him, yes.
And, you know, but why do, so then you say, well, why do people stay there? And they stay there because they feel valued. And they know that they can come up with the ideas, and no one's going to put down those ideas. And that's what makes it famous.
You know? So it's okay to be tough as long as you are respectful, if you will. And I value you. I may not agree with you. In fact, I often will disagree with you. But I'm respectful and I value what you have to say.
Exactly. Exactly. That's exactly right. And then the other piece, the E in my magnetic leadership, is engaging people in the possibilities. And, you know, he gets some ideas or somebody gets some ideas, and they rally people around those ideas. And they get people all excited about them. They get them engaged in it. And, you know, I mean, the new product that just came out, I mean, people waiting from 4 o'clock in the morning for the
right.
store to open. I mean, he's done it not only with the employees, but he's done it with the customer base.
Mm-hmm.
And he's really engaged people into what you can do. Now, part of that engagement is also the acquisitions and the partnerships that he's created. And I think this is the other piece of Steve Jobs that's part of that 8-point thing of why I think he's so successful, is all the acquisitions he's made, and he made quite a few, at least in excess of 20,
mm-hmm.
but they all complement the expertise that he already has. The other thing is all the partnerships. I mean, he did the Starbucks, AT&T, Intel. I mean, these are three unique industries.
Right.
And yet he has solid partnerships with all of those. You know.
So basically finding others, whether they be employees or joint venture partners or somebody that essentially shares your vision of, hey, here's how we can make things happen, here's how we can change things, and how I can be a part of what you do as well.
Exactly, exactly. That's exactly right. And, you know, I mean, to the point that Intel, when they did their partnership, decided that the Apple name was so much stronger than their own that they decided to use, to not use Intel Inside
mm-hmm.
as their marketing strategy.
Right, right.
You know, and then the whole AT&T, why did he go after AT&T? Well, I mean, they had the largest distribution network. It was a worldwide network, which he really needed because he's expanding into all these different countries. And, you know, with limited changes. I mean, he didn't invest a whole lot with the AT&T partnership. I'm sure he invested, but, you know, it was the logical way to go initially. And then, of course, they went into Verizon and all the others.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But, I mean, they've been very, very strategic in their acquisitions. They've been very, very strategic in their partnerships. And he's gotten not only, I mean, when you think about it, he gets all the Starbucks people
right.
excited.
Right.
Right? Because he's got the Wi-Fi. He gets all the AT&T people excited. I mean, he is talking about engaging others that you would not necessarily engage in your vision and your partner through your partnership.
And so looking at almost what might be thought of as somewhat ignored communities sometimes and showing them how they actually do share in your vision as well with what you're proposing and what you do.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Again, I find it so fascinating because it does parallel so much of what I researched with Obama and his campaign in terms of how he actually went after the youth vote, where everybody else had ignored it at that point, and having them tie their vision into his vision and such. And so I see these parallels with magnetic leadership, and so many different things.
Between the Obama campaign and what Steve Jobs has done, huge.
So we have recruit and retain, we have engaging the possibilities, and A is
appreciation.
Uh-huh.
Rewarding and recognizing people for their efforts. And although people at Apple will say, you know, I worked my butt off, I worked harder, but they feel like they're being rewarded. And it's not just the money. It's the fact that they're part of a winning team.
Right, right.
That's what they've really, I mean, you go into those Apple stores, and, I mean, those people are so energized, and it's because of, they feel like they're bringing out this new stuff, and the stuff works.
Mm-hmm. And they get to share their toys with you, and because they're so excited about them, they just want to help spread that message.
Exactly, exactly. And, I mean, they're obviously rewarded, you know, with a paycheck and those kinds of things, but they're rewarded more with the non-monetary things, which is sense of making a difference.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's what people want in this world. They want to feel like they're making a difference in this world, and those people are.
Excellent, excellent. So appreciation, and L is?
L is the loyalty. It brings the it's the leadership that brings the loyalty. Now, the other piece of this in the leadership, particularly with Apple, that I do want to highlight is, and what's made them successful, is Jobs, they had some hard decisions to make.
Right.
Some tough decisions as they've gone. It's not always been the rosy road for them. You know, they had the Newton product that came out. It failed.
Oh, I remember that.
Right. And, I mean, the minute Jobs came back, he said, all right, we're getting rid of Newton. All right? And that was a tough decision.
Mm-hmm.
It was the first time they had really failed at a product, but he said, all right, we're going to get rid of it. We're going to move on. There was another one. I think it was the Pippin, P-I-P-P-I-N.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a Macintosh portable, and that didn't fly either. And once again, we're not. He said very clearly, we're not going to live in the past. We're going to move forward for the future.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting.
And so, you know, making those tough decisions is not easy for CEOs.
Right, right. Hey, I want to pick up on that in just a moment because that raises a question I have about, you know, Jobs in particular, but his scenario, but I think it applies to many of us who are leaders or want to be leaders and, you know, are looking to share their vision, and sometimes the world doesn't react that way. I'll get to that in a moment, but I do want to remind everybody, you are listening to Real Issues, No BS on WebTalkRadio.net with your host, Gary Kaskowitz, author of Brown It Like Barack. Today's special guest, we are joined with by Diane Durkin. Diane is the author of two books, The Loyalty Factor, Building Employee, Customer, and Brand Loyalty. But her upcoming book, soon to be released in a month or so, is The Power of Magnetic Leadership. It's Time to Get Real. And today we are talking about the notion of magnetic leadership with a lot of example from Steve Jobs and Apple, because they're one of the most innovative leadership-driven companies that I can imagine as well. And Diane, you were just talking about the whole notion of sometimes leaders have to make tough decisions and, you know, to stay true to the vision, if you will. And I have a question about that, and regarding Steve Jobs in particular, and this is true, I think, for any of us who might encounter this. What happens, if you will, when others around you don't necessarily buy into your vision? For example, with Steve Jobs, the whole earlier days of Apple, when he was ousted as CEO because they were trying to become more corporate-like and such not, and it turned out that, you know, he was actually ousted and went on to start Pixar and such not, and he claimed as actually one of the turning points in his life that he was ousted. But what do you do when the world around you doesn't really appreciate your vision?
Well, that's a very interesting question, and one that you've got to sort of make your way through it.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point, as in his case, you know, they just said, "Hey, this is it, goodbye." A lot of times, it will happen, as it did in his case, that it didn't pan out the way it should have with the not following through on his vision. And so they had to bring him back.
Right.
And you saw the same thing with Starbucks.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? There, you know, he left. The vision got all mucked up. They started going into all of these things that were not their core business.
Mm-hmm.
And in the end, they ended up bringing the Starbucks CEO back as well, Schultz.
Right.
Because and when he came back, the first thing he had to do was get back to the focus.
Right.
The core values, what are we here to do? And the minute new people come in and try going away from the vision or the vision for the future, it tends not to work.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to
mm-hmm.
stay, you know, simple, consistent, unless you're totally off base. But in this case, both with Starbucks and with Apple, they were not off base.
Right, right.
They were making great money, and then everybody, they make great money, and then they say, okay, well, now we're going to go here, we're going to do this. It's called unfocus.
Right. Yeah. That is really interesting to me because in my work, I've encountered similar things, and I've found, in talking with many people, a couple of things that you're alluding to here. The notion of, first of all, it's my contention, and based on people I've worked with, that people want to be part of a vision, that they're so much more motivated when they feel a sense of I'm contributing to something even bigger than myself, that, yeah, I want my paycheck, of course, but I also have this almost like the actualization phase of Maslow's hierarchy, the notion of I am leaving something, I want to contribute to something beyond myself. And so I think most people actually are motivated by that idea that they do want to leave something, they do want to be tied into somebody's vision. But the flip side to that, which you mentioned, I think, really tellingly with Apple and Starbucks and such not, is that you have to always be true to that as well, because it's all too easy for us to lose sight of that vision sometimes and then find ourselves losing customers and losing market share and such not because we were not congruent with our vision.
Exactly, exactly. But at the same time, I want to highlight the L. We talked about leadership and loyalty. The other piece of the L is good leadership means that you listen.
Okay.
Okay, and you really have to listen to your employees, but you also have to listen to your customers.
Mm-hmm.
What do your customers want? And in this case, Apple has done an incredible job of always listening to the customers. Taking the customer input and then massaging it as they needed to massage it to come up with the next product.
So how does Apple do it, and or how could anybody on this audience truly listen to their customers and or their employees to really get that vision, of everyone on board with it, if you will?
Okay, let me talk about the employee one first, and then I'll talk about the customer one.
Okay.
From an employee standpoint, I had a client unfortunately, they lost their CEO unexpectedly.
Mm-hmm.
And the person that was appointed as the acting CEO decided this was a perfect opportunity for us to recreate where we wanted to go for the future and get everybody energized. So they put together a company meeting, and, this was not insignificant. This was about 400 people.
Mm-hmm.
And they broke them up into groups and said, all right, we want you to answer three questions. What are our strengths, what are our areas for development, and where should we be going for the future?
Mm-hmm.
And come up with what, if you could identify us 2 years out, what would we look like? It was amazing. All of these groups got together after working for, a couple of hours. And when the team got together that night and we looked at all of these various groups, it was amazing how similar the vision for the future was.
So was that vision inherently there to begin with, or was it something that was more organic and you found kind of,
I think it
grew?
Was organic, mm-hmm. and we just got everybody excited about it.
Okay.
All right. And what ended up happening, because it was an international organization, is we asked representatives from the various groups. We put it together and came up with a vision statement. Everybody was very excited about it, but we ended up putting it together so that the different cultures, for example, we had Indian people, we had Japanese people,
mm-hmm.
Chinese,
mm-hmm.
European, French, and so forth, very international. We had each of the people come up to the center of the stage and say the vision in their native tongue.
Interesting. Okay.
It was the most, there wasn't a dry eye in the place.
Sure, absolutely.
And what happened is they were able to get through this loss of a CEO that they adored and able to move forward
mm-hmm.
on a whole new excitement level on a vision that, you're right, it was organic, but it hadn't been clearly, succinctly.
Okay. They all kind of felt it, but nobody was able to really express it. And this way, they not only expressed it, but they expressed it in native tongues, if you will, that really made it cohesive.
Exactly. Now, on the customer side, same type of thing. I always recommend, in fact, we're working with a client right now, where we're going out to their customer base, and they have four distinct markets, and each of the markets is slightly different.
Mm-hmm.
So they were trying to come up with a, you know, well, where are our products going and how are we going to get there and which ones? And they were having real difficulty to determine, well, we can't do all of this at once and the businesses are so different. So we decided that we would go to each of the businesses and just key customers, not necessarily huge amounts.
Right, right.
To really ask them, okay, what is it that we can do to help you grow your businesses?
Mm-hmm.
It's not about us growing our business. It's about helping you, our customers, to grow your business.
Right.
And it takes on a whole new perspective. We've gotten input from the four areas. Surprising, there are some differences, but surprisingly, there's a great base there.
Mm-hmm.
So here this company was wrestling with the fact, well, geez, we're going to have to come up with four new products. And as it turns out, it's developed a whole new creative and innovative thinking within the organization that, wait a minute, we can have a base product, and then we can add this on for this market, this for this market,
mm-hmm,
this
mm-hmm.
for this market,
okay.
Customize it. And so it ended up saving the company enormous amounts of money from where they were initially thinking, and the customers are feeling like they've had a real input into this.
Because the company actually put on the you focus and listened to them rather than just say, here's what I have to do, more of what would you like.
Exactly.
Yeah, and so many of us, so many organizations and businesses that we deal with today don't do that. It's one of my pet peeves, this notion of, you know, we live in a, we seek relationships in a transaction-based world and we're treated like wallets instead of being listened to. And I find that so frustrating. I'm always so happy to hear of good examples where, you know, truly listening and having that you orientation really does pay off, not only financially, but in terms of better products and whatever else we're doing.
Yeah, it's amazing. And what I always say, magnetic leadership is all about questions.
Mm-hmm.
Questions are the secret weapon.
Excellent, excellent.
Whether you're dealing internally or externally, just ask, listen, and then act.
Ask, listen, and act. I love that. So, Diane, we have a couple of minutes left. I was wondering if you could just share with our audience away from, you know, what if we're not the CEO of an organization, so to speak, but we want to be leaders in our lives or leaders in our business or our small business or such not. I know these steps translate. I mean, I know they do. Are there any words of wisdom you would have, you know, for somebody to apply either individually or for a small business rather than, Fortune 500 type operation?
Well, I want to say two things. First of all, every single person in this world can be a leader.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Okay? I mean, I often use the example of Rosa Parks on that bus.
Right.
I mean, she was just, she wouldn't move, and she turned out to be a leader, and look what everybody has done as a result of her.
Right.
The other thing is, I just had a meeting this morning with, I run a CEO group of companies that are small. You know, probably the largest is about 5 million.
Okay.
And we were talking about what are the leadership skills that you have that you need to do. And it still, it goes down to the basics. I mean, it's all about this vision,
mm-hmm.
this purpose, and
mm-hmm.
the values. And the other, that's the first thing. The
right.
second piece of it is engaging the people in the possibilities. So one of these companies that I'm working with right now, small organization, only 45 people,
mm-hmm.
all right? It's a manufacturing organization that's having a lot of issues. I said, I met with the employees, figured out what the issues are. I said, all right, let's break it down to four major issues. We broke it down to the four. We're putting teams of people together to solve those business issues.
Mm.
All right, one of them is a production scheduling.
Okay.
They can't seem to get it. I said, okay, you guys as senior managers can come up with a new new scheduling program. Nobody's adhering to it.
Mm-hmm.
Why aren't people adhering to it? Because, number one, they don't understand it. Number two, they didn't put it together. And number three, they think it's just management talking, and they don't understand the benefits of it.
Okay, okay.
Let them put it together, they're going to adhere to it.
Right. Get that notion of buy-in.
Exactly. The second one is rewards and recognition. Nobody around here recognizes us. On. You hear that all the time.
Right.
Okay. You guys define a reward and recognition system that's going to work for you. All right? And it's amazing to me. They don't come up with all the money ones, the expensive ones. They just come up with simple thank yous.
Right. Right. The simple, again, this is music to my ears, because the simple notion of we're people and relationships are crucial. The notion of I want to be more than, you know, just a wallet or a worker. I'm more than that, and I can contribute. And I think what so many people miss so oftentimes is, even as an individual, even if we're the worker in the scenario, we can still be a leader. We can still be magnetic. We can still do these things you're talking about. We just have to, you know, show and listen to people and have that notion of the appreciation and, you know, engaging that you're talking about. And it doesn't have to be a CEO of a Fortune 500. Any of us can do it, and we all should do it.
Exactly. And Gary, I just want to say one last thing here.
Mm-hmm.
Companies don't solve problems.
Mm-hmm.
People do.
Absolutely right. Diane, this has been so fascinating. Where can listeners go to find out more about what you do? I know your book's coming out. What else? Where can they go to find out what you do and get more information on these type of topics that I think are really crucial for us to understand?
They can go to our website, which is www.loyaltyfactor.com, LOYALTY. F like Frank, ACTOR. And I also have some white papers that are on the website that they, if they want more information, they can get.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Diane. It's been such a pleasure talking to you. I really, really appreciate these ideas you're bringing forth, because I think that we all need them in our lives. So it's been such a pleasure. Thank you so much for your time.
Well, thank you for having me.
My pleasure. Thank you again, Diane.
Well, there you have it, folks. As you can see, there are many things that we all can do in order to become more leaders in our own lives. You do not have to be the CEO of Apple Computer in order to do these principles. We all lead our lives, whether we're employees, whether we're parents or friends. We all have leadership. We all have a vision to share. And I guess the most important takeaway for me with this whole discussion: know your vision, know your purpose, know what it is you stand for, and convey that to others so that they believe in your cause along with you. That's how strong brands are built. Whether you be a small business owner, whether you be an individual, that's how strong brands are built, is by understanding what it is you are all about and having the world share with that. So again, very interesting topic. If you like these sort of topics, again, you have been listening to Real Issues and No BS on WebTalkRadio.net with your host, Gary Kaskowitz. Please do visit my websites, whywebuy.com, which has interesting information and resources on the way and whys we do things, in terms of marketing at least. And also my website, GaryKaskowitz.com, if you want to find out more about me and what I'm all about, visit there as well. But as I say, thank you so much for joining us this week, and I hope you had a great time listening, and I look forward to talking with you all again next week. Thanks a lot.
You can find out more about Gary and about how marketing affects us by going to his website, whywebuy.com. You can find Gary's book, Branded Like Barack, by clicking on the book cover on the webtalkradio.net page in front of you. Thank you for joining us today, and make sure to come back next week for another edition of Real Issues, No BS.